You can really read Job 1 and 2 together, but for time's sake this morning, I'm only going to deal with chapter 1. In chapter 1, you have terrible circumstances that arise in a good man's life. That's probably the beginning of the age-old question, why do bad things happen to good people? In chapter 2, Job is tested even farther, and his health is taken from him. I'll not deal with his health part this morning. I'm going to deal with other issues that he had in his life today. I personally don't know of anybody that's ever suffered like Job. But can I tell you that he was a real man? There are some Bible critics that say, oh, he wasn't even a historical figure. But the book of Ezekiel refers to Job as a real man. And so if Ezekiel was real, Job is real. He doesn't speak of Job in a metaphorical way. And so he is a real man. He lived in a place called Uz, U-Z. I've often wondered if the writer of The Wizard of Oz took the name from Uz. But in Uz, which is most likely what we know as Syria today, this man lived for a good while. And then he died, and at some point, the book of Job was written. I do not know when it was written, nor does anybody else know when it was written. From a historical standpoint, we know when it took place. It took place really during the time of Abraham. If you're talking about a contemporary, which is simply a word which means at the time in which they both lived, they were contemporaries of each other. It was the time of what we call the patriarchs. And Job could have lived any time from just after the flood, which was Noah, until after Abraham, because he actually outlived Abraham. When Job suffers, which we will get to in just a few minutes, after his suffering, he lives another 140 years. Abraham only lived to be 175. And so this man Job outlived Abraham. You find the years in chapter 42. We're not going to go to that today, but just so you'll have a reference, that's where you find that. The first thing that I want you to think with me about today is I want you to think with me about Job's situation. The situation is laid out for us. This is a very simple chapter to outline. And so we're just going to kind of walk through some of the things that are in the chapter today. We'll not use all the verses. We will skip some of them. I will refer to others. But basically it says that there was a man who was in the land of Uz. His name was Job. But I want you to notice the testimony that is given to us in verse 1. He was perfect. That means that he was a good man. All right? Doesn't mean that he was without sin, but he was a good man. It says that he is upright. That means that he is a man that could be trusted. When people would come into his presence, and after they left, they would look at him and they would say, that's a good man. If they had any kind of business dealings, they would say, you can take that man's word. But it also says that he feared God. That means there was a reverence that he had for the Lord God. I will mention this possibly another time in just a little bit. But in the book of Job, there is the name of God, which is called El Shaddai. 31 times in this book, El Shaddai is mentioned. And if we were going to say, well, what does that mean? It means the Almighty. In other words, he is the most powerful, he is omnipotent. And so 31 times in the book of Job, you have the Almighty that is referenced. And so he feared God and he eschewed or eschewed evil. The word eschewed or eschewed, however how you want to pronounce it, it's an old English word which simply means to avoid. It didn't mean that he went around chewing on evil. It meant he was avoiding evil. And so we see his situation. That's his testimony. But then I want you to see some of the particulars in his life. Look with me at verse number 2. And there were born unto him 7 sons and 3 daughters. This good, upright man that avoided evil, God blessed him with 10 kids. Now, I'm thanking the Lord today that God blessed me with only 3. I've got 3 grandkids and I'm about broke. If I had 10 kids, if they all had kids, I'd have to live with one of you. But I am thanking the Lord that Job was blessed. And can I tell you that in ancient times, when people had many, many children, they were being blessed of the Lord. In just a few weeks, we will have Mission Sunday. And one of the jokes that I constantly use when I'm visiting in people's homes, if they have 3 kids, I'll say, well, you get one more child and you qualify to be a missionary. Because when you have missionary families that come through, they have many times multiple children. I saw a man not too long ago that was in a mission conference with us 3 years ago. He is a church planter out west, and I saw him at this meeting this night where another guy was preaching, but this guy was coming back through Georgia, and I was talking to him a little bit, and I said, so how's the work going? He said, oh, work's doing well, and he said, God has blessed us with our 10th kid. Well, when he was here 3 years ago, he had 9. And I told him, I said, you need a television. And he was like, oh, man, I'm telling you, it's great. We got 10 kids. And I'm thinking, he better have a garden. That's what I'm thinking. But old Job was blessed of the Lord with 10 children. He had 7 boys and 3 girls. And you know, one of the things that I really like about Job, whenever I'm reading in the time in which he lived, it's different than the time of the law. You know, if you read through the law, and you ladies are going to really like this. If you read through the law, one of the things that you'll find is that whenever the father died, the boys got everything. The girls didn't get anything. But in the book of Job, we know that during the time of the patriarchs, pre-law, that the girls got their part just like the boys did. And I think that's the way it ought to be. And so you've got Job that is blessed of the Lord, and he has this family, and I mean, they are just being a good family. I mean, when and we're going to get to this in just a little bit, but even these kids loved each other. One of the things that is just horrible for me to observe is when siblings cannot get along with one another. That bugs me to no end. Well, I don't like it because, you know, old Tom got this and, you know, and old Andy got that and I didn't get nothing. All right? And I'm thinking, all right, so you didn't get something. I really believe this. I believe that if we had a better attitude as our parents were growing, most of us would probably be a lot more blessed at their home going. And so it bothers me that siblings cannot get along because that is not God's way. But you find these seven boys and you find these three girls, and they're going to be hanging out together here in just a few minutes. Well, not only did he have the kids, his family, but he had some pretty good financials. Look at verse 3. His substance. Now, when you read the word substance, I want you to think of your retirement, your 401k, your IRA, your pension, what you've got in the bank, your property, those types of things. Now, in ancient times, people were, their wealth was gauged by three things. They were gauged by the size of their family. He's got 10. That means that if he's got work to do before the slaves and the servants were able to be hired, that means that he had somebody to help him pick the garden. He had somebody to feed the chickens. He had somebody to make sure that the livestock had some hay. And so they were blessed by the number of kids they had. Number two, they were blessed by the lands that they possessed. If you were a landowner, you were considered to be in the upper echelon in the caste system. But then there was something else. It had to do with livestock. And I want you to see how wealthy this man was. Look at verse 3. He had 7,000 sheep. I don't want one. But he had 7,000 of them. That meant he had all kind of wool, probably two or three times a year. He had all kind of food. He was just a blessed man with sheep. He had 3,000 camels. Can I tell you that camels are a money-making beast? You say, why do you say that? Have you ever raised camels? No, but I've ridden one. Can I tell you that to ride a camel in Jericho, Israel, it'll cost you $20 and the ride is less than 30 seconds? It takes more time to get on and off the camel than it does to ride the camel. And you're happy about it. Because when you finally get off, you think, my back and hips are never going to be the same. But all I'm doing the math. I'm thinking, the group that we were with, we had, the last time I went, I think we had about 80. The last time before that was about 120. And so we had about 80 people, and I think out of our group, probably 40 of them rode the camel. We got people in this church that's ridden the camel. Jackson's ridden the camel. Miss Wanda, did you ride the camel? Vicky did. Okay. All right. Vicky rode the camel. We probably, out of our group, we had probably 40 people that rode that camel. I mean, we were late getting to the next site to see because so many people were riding the camel. Can you do multiplication? $20 times 40 people, $800. That guy's happy to feed that camel every day. And you know what happens? That's just with our group. We were in and out of Jericho in about 2 hours. If he did that three times a day, he's banking. And this man, now he didn't have tourists going to Syria, but there were caravans. And you've got these camels that can drink gallons and gallons and gallons of water, and they carry all kinds of burdens that are merchandise. And this man was a merchant. And he had the big trucks to carry the merchandise. And so he has 500 yoke of oxen besides the 3,000 camels. Now, a yoke usually is two. So that means that a yoke of oxen would be two. So it says there's 500 yoke. So that means he's got 1,000 oxen. 500 she-asses, female donkeys, and a very great household. You better have a big household. You got a lot of animals to feed. And so, this man was the greatest of all the men of the East. He's got the family, he's got the finances, but can I tell you, he even had some good friends. It's a wonderful thing to have friends. Some of the dearest friends that I have in this world are sitting in this room today. Friends are wonderful. And when he got sick, those friends came from a distance. And for a while, they just sat with him. Now, ultimately, they started giving him bad theology. But for a while, they just sat there. And can I tell you that sometimes just sitting there is good? A couple of months ago, we had had somebody that had a very, very long surgery. I mean, it lasted like 7 hours. And Brother Darrell was the one that was at the hospital that day. And he sat there for 7 hours at the hospital. And I asked the people, I said, "What did y'all talk about?" And so, well, we talked about different things, but mostly we just sat there, you know, and Brother Darrell just sat there and prayed with us and was just an encouragement to us. And I've had people tell me, you know, we've seen a side of Brother Darrell since he's been doing all of the hospital, or at least most of them, the hospital visits. He visits like 3 days a week, and I do maybe one or two. But they said, we've seen a side of him that we've never seen because he just loves us. He just sits there with us. And when I heard that, I'm thinking, that's a good friend. And that's what these three guys did. They came from a distance and they sat there for a good while. And can I tell you, sometimes you don't even know what to say, but just your presence helps somebody. Just your presence. Well, that's his situation. But second of all, I want you to see his sufferings. Now, we're going to skip some verses and come back to them in a moment, but I want you to look with me at verse 13. And it says, there was a day. Don't skip that. This is a specific day. There was a day when the sons and his daughters were eating and drinking wine in their eldest brother's house. Now, we're not going to talk about the children at this party right now. I'm going to come back to them. But it mentions them because it's a festive time. And can I tell you, you don't ever know when one phone call is going to change your life. You don't ever know when one knock on the door is going to change your life. I heard Billy Kelly say when he was with us one time, he said, you better get all the joy and happiness you can, he said, because you're going to spend a lot of time at funeral homes, hospitals, and gravesides. And you and I need to better take our joy, because there'll come a time when that phone call is going to come. There's going to come a time when that knock on the door is going to come. And you just don't know when that's going to happen. And so verse 13 gives us the setting of what's taking place. And on this day, this specific day, this same day, look at verse 14. And there came a messenger unto Job. And he said, the oxen were plowing and the asses feeding beside them. And the Sabaeans fell upon them, took them away, Yea, they have slain the servants with the edge of the sword, and I only am escaped alone to tell thee. The Sabaeans were a marauding group of people. They were enemies of Job and his people, and they were always trying to steal, rob, maim, and basically loot anything that they could come across. Well, on this particular day, they came across guys that were plowing yoke of oxen. They were having the she-asses feed next to them, maybe on the sides of the fields. And these Sabaeans killed the men and took his oxen. They took all of the she-asses, all of the yoke of oxen, all 500 yoke, 1,000 of them. And they're telling Job this. And he's thinking, wow, there goes my tractors. I mean, my oxen, I mean, that's what pulls my plows. I've got lands that'll have to be tilled. What am I going to do? And he's thinking, boy, that's bad. But look at verse 16. While he was yet speaking, there came also another, same day, and said, the fire of God is fallen from heaven. Lightning is hit. And it was so severe that it hath burned up the sheep and the servants and consumed them. And I only am escaped to tell thee. He's got 500 yoke of oxen that are gone. He's got she-asses that are gone. Now, lightning has come and killed his sheep. How many sheep? 7,000 sheep. That's a big lightning storm. But not only did he lose the livestock, he lost the people. Look at verse 17. And while he was yet speaking, I mean, the hits keep on coming. I mean, the Sabaeans have come, the lightning has come, and it said, the Chaldeans made out three bands. They divided into thirds, and they fell upon the camels. How many camels did he have? Well, if you look back at verse 3, there were 3,000 of them. And so they carried them away. They slain the servants with the edge of the sword. And I am escaped alone to tell thee. And so he's thinking, man, all of my livestock and all of the men that care for my livestock, they're gone. I'm broke. What am I going to do? And no doubt by this time, he's probably set down somewhere. But then I want you to notice the biggest blow of all to this point. Look with me at verse 15, or 18, excuse me. And while he was yet speaking, there came also another. And they said, or he said, thy sons and thy daughters were eating and drinking wine in the eldest brother's house. Why are they there? Evidently, these 10 kids really love hanging with each other. And when they would have a birthday, they would have a birthday party. Some of you have traditions like that in your house. Almost on any given birthday in our house, we're going to go to Provino's at some point. Why is that? Because the birthday boy or the birthday girl gets a free dinner. And they have just a tradition. The oldest boy, maybe he had the largest home, and so one of them was having a birthday, and they were all together. And what happened? It says there came a great wind from the wilderness smote the four corners of the house, and it fell upon the young men, and they are dead. And I only am escaped alone to tell thee. Now, if you read this chapter, you'll find that it's not only the seven boys that are there, but they've invited their three sisters to come. And so when one tornado comes through, 10 children gone in a split second. One day. I don't think any of you have ever had a day like that. I've said to my wife sometimes, whew, boy, it's been a long day today. But I've never had a day like this. I can't really say that I understand what he's going through. I've never had that kind of wealth to lose. I've never lost a child. Some of you can empathize more with that than I can. And when I say I've never lost a child, Deb and I, we did go through a miscarriage one time, and I think that we've got a baby in heaven that we'll get to see one day. But we never actually got to hold that baby. We never got to see that baby born, and we never got to rear that child in the nurture and admonition of the Lord. But we haven't lost children the way that Job did. I mean, I've got friends that they've gone through that. One of our missionaries that will speak for us probably this Christmas is Buddy Thigpen. And some of you know the story. The very first day that he had started his deputation to be a missionary to Russia, he had a three-year-old boy that stepped off of a curb up in Resaca, Georgia. And when that little man fell off that curb and hit his head on the bumper, the people in the car did not know it, and they backed out over him, and that little guy was killed. 3 years old. He had followed his mother out to the car, and she didn't know that he was behind her. And he steps off a curb, hits his head, and the car rolls over him. I got on the phone and I was trying to get in touch with him, and he was at the Erlanger Medical Center up in Chattanooga, and he finally got to the phone, and all I could hear was, oh, moaning. And I said, "Buddy, this is Tommy." And he would say, "Oh." Then he would say, "Tell me what to do. Tell me what to do." And I said, "Buddy, I can't tell you what to do. I don't know what to do. But I know I'll come get you right now. Do you want me to go get in my car and come and pick you up in Chattanooga right now?" And he goes, "No. Tell me what to do." And then he would moan some more. I've never heard anybody moan like that. Can you imagine the moaning that Job went through when 10 kids were killed at a split second of each other? I talked with a man not too long ago, less than 6 months ago. And he had a couple of children that were killed within 6 months of each other, and he and his wife have not gotten over it to this day. We had a man that used to do the locks at this church. He had two children that were killed in a car wreck. The boy was 16, the girl was 12, and to this day, they never got over it, and now he's in heaven. His wife's still alive, but they never got past that. He lost 10. Imagine this phone call. You've got three grown kids, and they have done well. You've got one of them that maybe is a flight attendant. Maybe you got a girl that's a flight attendant. And then you've got maybe a couple of sons. One maybe would work in banking at the World Trade Center, and one would work in the military at the Pentagon. And on September the 11th, 2001, you get a phone call saying your son's been killed in the World Trade Center. Your son's been killed at the Pentagon, and your daughter's been killed in a plane crash in a field. Can you imagine how you would just crumple under that pressure? Job goes through this. And you've got suffering by the hands of men. You've got suffering by the hands of what we would call Mother Nature. But I want you to glance back with me at verse 6. You've got suffering at the hands of Satan. Now, there was a day when the sons of God, which sometimes, not always, but sometimes it is a term used for angels. They came to present themselves before the Lord, and Satan came also among them. And the Lord said unto Satan, "Whence comest thou?" Then Satan answered the Lord and said, "From goings to and fro in the earth and from walking up and down in it." So you've got Satan that now comes onto the scene. And what does he do? He begins to accuse God. You say, "Wait a minute, I thought we were talking about Job." Yeah, but he's looking at God and saying, the only reason that Job, because see, God said, "Have you considered Job?" He said, "Yeah, the only reason that Job serves you is because you give him stuff. If you didn't give him anything, he wouldn't live for you. You've just made this guy uber wealthy, and because of that, you know, that's why he walks like he does, is he don't want to lose stuff." And so God allows him to touch Job. And he says, "Okay, you can take what he's got." Now, can I tell you, Job knows nothing about this. You keep that in mind. He doesn't know a thing about what takes place in chapter 1, verse 6 through verse 12. He's just living his life. I mean, he's living the dream, and it's a good dream until this day, when everything is gone in a split second and his kids are killed as the cherry on the top, so to speak. But you've got this conversation that's going on, and you've got God and Satan, and they're discussing this man. Can I tell you that the Lord may allow Satan to test you? You say, "Wait a minute now, preacher. I've got the Spirit of God that lives inside of me." Yes, you do. But may I remind you of the story over in the Gospels when Jesus looked at Simon Peter and he said, "Satan has desired to sift you as wheat." In other words, God may take his hedge of protection off of you and let Satan sift you to prove what you're made of. And so not only do we have suffering by the hands of men and suffering by the hands of Mother Nature and suffering by the hands of Satan, but we also have suffering ultimately because God allows it. Now, I've heard people say this: "I know that the devil's making me suffer right now." And that could be true. But can I tell you that God ultimately has allowed that? Because anytime God wants to, God can put Satan in his place. If you don't believe that, then you don't believe that God is sovereign and all-powerful. God can do whatever he wants to when he wants to do it. And so you've got, ultimately, his suffering was allowed by the Lord. Now, God does not tempt us to do evil, but Satan does. But sometimes there are things that crop up into our lives that the Lord God Almighty allows. And I can't explain it all. Sometimes here I am, I've been saved for years. I got saved back in 1972, way, way, way back before anybody ever had any fun. All right? These young people, they think, "Man, he's ancient. He's never had any fun in his life." Well, I'm telling you, I had a good life. It's been a pretty long one, not as long as some of you. Some of you are more ancient than I am. But these young people look at us and go, "Yeah, they got off the ark with Noah." That's what they think. And they look at pictures and they go, wow, was that really you? Yeah. Yeah, that was me. I've got pictures of me when I was a flat belly. I tell people I'm twice the man I used to be. But I'm telling you right now, sometimes God allows it. I can't tell you why good people always suffer, except God's allowed it. You remember the story in John chapter 9? You say, no. All right, listen to me. I'm going to tell you the story. There's a man that's been blind his whole life. The Pharisees come to Jesus and they look at him and they said, who did sin, this man or his parents? Remember that? You know why? That's their theology. Ultimately, Job's buddies are going to have this theology. Well, you must have been sinning in your life. And Jesus looked at those men and he said, neither of them sinned. He was blind for the glory of God. And I have visited people in the hospital and they would say, preacher, why is God allowing me to go through this? The ultimate answer is, he's going to get some glory somehow. That's the only answer I got. But it's a biblical answer. Now you can look and do some internal, evaluation. And it may be that it's the chastisement of God, but in Job's situation, it wasn't. And so when somebody says, well, I know why that old guy's in the hospital, yeah, God's zapping him. Not necessarily. Because you see the testimony he had, what was it? He was a perfect man. He was a good man. He was an upright man. He feared the Lord and he avoided evil. He was a good man, but he still suffered. And so we see his suffering. But can I show you one more thing this morning before we dismiss? I want you to see Job's strength. Oh, would to God we had strength like this. I personally don't think I do, but I want to. Look with me at verse 20. Then Job arose. In other words, evidently he'd been sitting down. He's trying to take all of this in. He arose. He rent his mantle. He took his outer coat. He ripped it as a sign of humility. He shaved his head. He fell down upon the ground. But notice what else he did. He worshiped. God, I don't understand it, but you're God. Lord, I don't know what you're doing, but you're God. And so we see that his attitude is the same as it was yesterday. Yesterday, thousands of animals, all kind of servants. I mean, he is a wealthy man. People look at him and they have great respect for him. Today, they're going, wonder what that guy did. Man, the Lord is hammering him. And so, what he had before this day arrived, he had on the day it arrived. Now, what does that teach us? That we prepare by walking with the Lord every day. Because there's coming a day when tragedy is going to hit. There's coming a day when we need strength. I'm thinking of a man right now that's he's a member of this church. He hasn't been now in several years. At one time he was a little bit faithful. I mean, he would be here, you know, maybe two or three Sunday mornings out of a month. Seldom on a Sunday night or a Wednesday night. But he would come on Sunday mornings mostly, him and his wife. But then they began to back off a little bit. I don't know if Brother Don preached something too hard and they just couldn't take it. But they began to back off. And then she got sick. And she developed Alzheimer's. When she got this Alzheimer's, she began to lose her mental capacity. And it got to where she didn't even know the man. And he saw her just deteriorating, going down, down, down. And he got bitter. And his son told me, he said, these were my dad's exact words. I don't even know if there's a God anymore. Why would the God that I tried to serve, why would he allow this to happen to your mother? If there's a God like that, I don't want to have anything to do with him. Can I tell you that that's the mark of a weak Christian? That's not the mark of a strong Christian. That's the mark of a weak Christian. And we need to have faith and trust that Job had. He immediately submitted. He rips his mantle. No longer is he wearing maybe like Joseph's coat of many colors. He's not wearing that anymore. He wants people to know that he is humbling himself before Jehovah. And so he submits. He doesn't know why it's happening. He just knows that it is happening. And he's thinking, I don't understand, but my God's good. So he recognizes the Lord. He says this, naked came I out of my mother's womb, and naked shall I return thither. Now you think about that. A man that had been so blessed, he was not going to allow the loss of all of those things to destroy him. He knew that he came into this earth with nothing, and he knew that he was not going to take anything with him. And he was okay with that if that was the will of God. And he said this, the Lord gave, and the Lord hath taken away. And that is my text for this morning. We love the first part of it. The Lord gave. Oh, I'm telling you, we all like that. We like it when the boss calls us in and we say, yes, sir, what do you need? I just wanted you to know I'm glad about the job you're doing. Here's a $2,000 bonus. I mean, you've got this man, and I mean, here he is. He's thinking, boy, God was good to me. And in one day, he's thinking, I don't understand it, but he's still God. And you and I like those bonuses, and we like those attaboys, and we like all the praise, and we like the awards, but there comes a time when the boss doesn't give you a $2,000 raise. He may say this, we don't need you anymore. You just don't ever know. But he says, the Lord gave, and the Lord hath taken away, blessed be the name of the Lord. Can I tell you, he voiced the truth? He voiced the truth. Blessed be the name of the Lord. Verse 22 closes with another praise for him. In all this, in everything that happened on this day, he sinned not. Now, the mark of an immature Christian is when something bad happens, we want to lash out. Well, if God's going to let that happen, then I won't even live for him. Can I tell you that that happened in my life? But I'd only been saved for 2 years. I was a baby. I was only 2 years in the Lord. But can I tell you that if something happens like that now, my reaction ought to be a lot different? If I'm as spiritual as I want to be, and as I hope I am, if I fall, you help me remember this. And if you fall, I'll in a gentle way try to help you remember this. That the Lord gives, the Lord takes away. Blessed be the name of the Lord. I heard the story about a little man that was about 4 years old, maybe five. And somebody had given him a little pocket watch. And the little guy couldn't tell time yet. He didn't know how to read the watch. And so a man asked him, said, hey, let me ask you something. He said, that watch that you've got, what are you going to do with that watch since you can't tell time? He said, well, I like that watch. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to give it to my mama, and she's going to hold it for me until I can understand time. And can I tell you, there are circumstances in our life that are like that watch. And we may not understand it right now. We may not have a clue what God's trying to do in our life right now. But I'm telling you, just hand that watch to God, and one day you'll understand it. You may be in heaven, or it may be just 6 months from now. When God takes away. Stonewall Jackson is someone that I love to read about. I'm not trying to refight the Civil War, but Stonewall Jackson was a great officer from the South. He was a Christian man. There was a commander's meeting going on, and one of the stories that I heard about him that I always loved, there was a commander's meeting going on, and there was a man that was just using all kind of vile cursing language. And Jackson looked at him, and he said, I perceive, sir, that thou art a vile man. Because even though he was a rough and tough officer, he wanted to honor God. He's away leading his particular army of the South. And he got a letter. And what had happened was this. His wife had given birth to a son that was stillborn. The baby, of course, was dead. Only an hour or two later, his wife began hemorrhaging, and his wife died. And he wrote a letter to his sister, who was not a believer. And he told her in that letter, he said, I cannot tell you, and I'm paraphrasing this, but I cannot tell you the hurt that I feel in my soul right now. And I think his wife's name was Ella, of losing Ella and my son at the same time. And then he made this statement. He said, I do not know how people without religion, without God, go through this. And I can only hope that when your time comes, that you'll be able to experience the peace that I experience. That's something special right there, folks. When you got people in your family and maybe they pass away and all of a sudden you're standing there and you know they're with the Lord and there's a peace. But you've got unsaved people or people that are not spiritual or people that are very immature in the Lord and they just sit there and they just grit their teeth and they think, why does God let this happen? Because he needs to let it happen to build us. And ultimately, so people can see how Christians go through adversity. But don't ever make the mistake of thinking that when God chooses to take something away from us, that he ceases to love us. Sometimes he takes it away because he loves us. Job chapter 2 is a fascinating chapter as well. Maybe I'll do that in a few weeks. Let's stand together. Now, Father, I want to thank you for Job.